we are following through on a listener suggestion this hour. Someone who wanted a program debunking alternative medicine. So we found an expert, the author of a new book, Do You Believe in Magic? The Sense and Nonsense of Alternative Medicine. And we will welcome your questions and perhaps your challenges for him. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Do you use any form of alternative medicine? Maybe vitamin C to prevent colds or echinacea? How about other supplements that claim to prevent disease? Do you see a chiropractor? Why? And are you sure your alternative medicine therapy works? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Dr. Paul Offit, Chief of the Division of Infectious Diseases and Director of the Vaccine Education Center at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. He is the author of several books, most recently, Do You Believe in Magic? The Sense and Nonsense of Alternative Medicine. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So why did you write this book?
The real reason I wrote this book is I had microfracture surgery on my left knee. I visited my University of Penn orthopedist, the sports medicine orthopedist, and he told me during my recovery period that I should take chondroitin sulfate and glucosamine, that would help. It would help prevent pain. It would help with healing. And it just didn't make much sense to me. I didn't understand why those two substances, when eaten, would actually increase collagen production or in any way decrease inflammation in my knee. So I went to look. In fact, there were a couple studies that showed that it was no different than placebo. So it worried me that what I considered to be conventional trained doctors were actually had crossed the line into alternative medicine. I no longer saw that line as being there. I think that with the conventional therapists have embraced what is called alternative medicine, and it upset me. So I think that's what spurred me on to write the book.
So, well, what's the harm in taking this supplement that some thought anyway would help joint pain, even if it didn't help?
I think that's a good point, actually. I mean, you could argue, certainly it's not an anti-inflammatory, and it doesn't do anything to promote collagen deposition, but you could argue that if I believed that it worked, that if I believed it was going to help me, that it may mean that I wasn't taking drugs like non-steroidal anti-inflammatories or COX-2 inhibitors like Celebrex, which do have side effects, and chondroitin sulfate, I think, for the most part, and glucosamine are safe, expensive, but safe. So you could argue if it meant that just my believing that it was going to work could, in fact, not only have me perceive my pain as being less, but I could have learned in some ways to release my own endorphins, which has been shown to be true, I think, in some of these cases with alternative therapies, that it was a value. I don't like the magic. I mean, I don't like it when when these recommendations are made and they're really not science-based. I think it's sort of a slippery slope.
Wasn't there a study somewhere along the line, some science that said that this stuff must help a little bit for this doctor to recommend it?
Yeah, I'd love to find it. I mean, the problem is that if you the answer to the question how many medical and scientific articles are published per day in the world, it's about 4,000. So for the most part, you can find a study to support any contention. The issue is, are there really good data? I mean, solid, large, prospective, well-controlled studies done by reputable institutions, published in good journals that show that there's a reproducible truth that emerges, and I think that's true here. And the truth is that chondroitin sulfate and glucosamine don't do anything to promote healing or decrease inflammation. But again, as you said, believing that it does is of some value, and you can argue that in some ways this is where alternative healers live.
Well, what are some of the most commonly used alternative supplements or therapies?
So people will take saw palmetto to shrink their prostates. They'll take echinacea to make their colds better. They'll take large quantities of vitamin C to try and make their colds better. They'll take concentrated garlic to try and lower their so-called bad cholesterol, low-density lipoprotein cholesterol. They'll take ginkgo biloba to try and improve their memory, those sorts of things.
So why does this stuff catch on?
Because I think belief matters. I would say two things. One is that if you look at, for example, acupuncture, which is based on 2nd century BC China, this was a culture that not only didn't believe in dissection, but in fact punished anyone who dissected by killing them, which was a real disincentive to learn about human anatomy. I mean, they believe there were 365 different parts of the body because there are 365 days of the year. They believe that if you inserted these needles under the skin anywhere from a half to 4 inches, that would balance yin and yang, and it would promote this sort of vital energy chi to flow. And they sort of came up with these 12 meridians into which one inserted those needles. Why 12 meridians? Because there's 12 great rivers in China. So if you believe that the human anatomy has nothing to do with rivers in China and nothing to do with days of the year, then they were making it up, that there's nothing accurate about acupuncture. And when you look at people who benefit from acupuncture, I think people do benefit, or some people benefit from acupuncture, and you insert needles randomly or insert them as, you know, defined by these second century Chinese acupuncturists, there's no difference. And if you use retractable needles, which is to say you feel the pinch of the needle but it doesn't go under your skin, that still works, which is interesting. What they then did was they took groups like this, people who benefited, and gave them naloxone or salt water, and found that naloxone, which is an endorphin blocker, endorphins are these chemicals that our body makes to, you know, to sort of relieve pain, that actually some people had learned to release their endorphins. That's cool. And I think that acupuncturists or homeopaths or chiropractors whose basic foundation isn't science-based, frankly, that owe it, I think, to the general medical community to figure out when something works, why it works. We don't have to look to the gods to explain these things. I think it's understandable, and it's we should try and understand it.
Well, I recall big fights between conventional doctors and chiropractors, and there might still be some animosity between the two, but eventually insurance companies began to pick up going to a chiropractor if you had, for instance, low back pain. Are you saying that chiropractors don't work either?
What I'm saying is chiropractic, which was founded in the late 1800s, was built on a nonsensical notion, which is that every disease is associated with a misalignment of the spinal cord, a so-called subluxation, and that if you then brought that subluxation into line, that you would cure that disease, whatever the disease was, diabetes, gallbladder disease, etc. That's nonsense. Now, you can argue reasonably that chiropractors, when they see someone who has low back pain, are going to do a better job at massage therapy than would a conventional physician who's probably just going to give you a prescription and in 10 minutes say goodbye. So I do think there is some value to chiropractors in that setting. But I think the minute they sort of cross the line into these medical diseases, that's when you enter a world of quackery.
So many of these alternative therapies don't work. What are the most dangerous alternatives?
Right. I guess Steve Jobs to me is the poster boy for the danger of alternative medicine. I mean, Steve Jobs had a pancreatic cancer, and when people hear that term, they assume it's a death sentence. But he didn't have the kind of pancreatic cancer that would typically kill. He had something called a neuroendocrine tumor, which just happened to be in his pancreas. Had he had early surgery, he had a 95% chance of survival. But Steve Jobs knew better. He elected to do acupuncture. He elected to do coffee enemas, which is at least counterintuitive. He elected to do sort of, you know, megavitamins and fruit juices and vegetable juices until it was too late, and ultimately it ended up costing him his life. So if you choose an alternative therapy instead of a conventional therapy that does work, that's a mistake. And the other thing is there are certainly, you know, a number of these products that are harmful. I think this industry, the dietary supplement industry, lives under this untouchable halo as if it can't possibly do harm, and yet every couple weeks the FDA, in frankly a reactive and not proactive way, ends up pulling these products off the shelf because they do an enormous amount of harm. I mean, you look at that thing that just happened in Hawaii with the Oxy Elite Pro, you know, which caused people to have severe liver disease, caused at least one death, caused people to require liver transplantations. This is an unregulated industry, and you know, we occasionally have to pay the price for this unregulated industry.
I miss that. What was the supplement or the therapy that caused liver damage?
It was called Oxy Elite Pro. But there's a lot of these. There was a vitamin C preparation just in the last couple months, made in Connecticut by a company in Connecticut. But it was a vitamin C preparation that was, and they also made, I think, a multi B complex as well as a multi mineral preparation. And there were a group of women in Connecticut who started to develop masculinizing symptoms. And when they looked, the FDA finally looked, because the doctor was shrewd enough to see this connection, they found that their vitamin C preparation was contaminated with high levels of anabolic steroids. I don't know how you do that when you manufacture vitamin C, but they managed to do it, and ultimately it was pulled off the market. But I don't think people, when they look at the label, they assume that that label is indicative of what's in the bottle, and it often isn't. Well, frankly, when that purity first problem hit, we at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia went to look on our shelves to see if our buyer had actually bought that preparation as vitamin C, because we don't have any control over our buyer. We didn't, but you know, it could have been that we would have given high doses of anabolic steroids to a vulnerable population of hospitalized children. I mean, that's how in some ways dangerous an unregulated industry can be.
What about if somebody takes a supplement or uses a therapy as a last resort or in conjunction with conventional medicine?
See, I think, let me take a step back. I think that terms like alternative medicine, complementary medicine, integrative, holistic medicine are nonsensical. If a medicine works, if an alternative medicine, if you will, works, then it's medicine. And if an alternative medicine doesn't work, then it's not an alternative. So, I mean, I just think that if we're going to say that any of these products have a health benefit, then we should prove that they do. And if they do, then they should become part of the mainstream and not sort of live in this kind of shadow industry to the side of medicine.
Well, here's a silly example, but we do have a show called The People's Pharmacy that we run on Wisconsin Public Radio. And one of the things that the co-hosts of The People's Pharmacy will do, we'll talk about home remedies. They always say, though, we do not want to recommend anything that would harm you. We also will say there's no science to back up why, for example, Vicks Vapor Rub rubbed on your toes will take care of toenail fungus in some cases. What's the harm in that?
Well, the harm in that is if they make recommendations for treatments for things that don't work and replacing things that do. So, for example, if you walk into a health food store and say, I have high levels of bad cholesterol, what would you recommend? Invariably, the 25-year-old standing behind that counter will point to, you know, concentrated garlic preparations like Garlicin. That's been studied. It's an easy study to do because the readout is simple. It's just the level of LDL cholesterol. It doesn't work. Now, if you have a history of heart disease and you have an elevated level of LDL cholesterol, you benefit from a statin. It couldn't be clearer. In fact, just in the last week, you probably saw this. It was in the news. This sort of U.S. National Task Force for Prevention, you know, made a recommendation for statin in people who have elevated levels and have a past history of heart disease or have a family history of heart disease. So if you choose that garlic preparation, you're making a bad choice, a choice that could potentially limit your life. That's the harm here.
We are talking with Dr. Paul Offit. He is the author of Do You Believe in Magic? The Sense and Nonsense of Alternative Medicine. What questions do you have for him, or what forms of alternative medicine do you believe in, and why? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Dr. Paul Offit. He is the author of Do You Believe in Magic? The Sense and Nonsense of Alternative Medicine. Dr. Offit is also chief of the Division of Infectious Diseases and director of the Vaccine Education Center at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Our first caller is Donna in Prairie du Chien. Hi, Donna.
Good morning. Thank you for having him on, because I really love a good debate.
So what is, you do go an alternative route, I understand.
Well, basically I had to. Back in 2006, my body ballooned everything I ate, and it didn't matter if it was solids, it didn't matter if it was a steak. By the time I was done eating, I could set my plate on my stomach. I looked like I was pregnant with twins again. And it would come and go. And I would go to the chiropractor. I would go to my physician, my nurse practitioner. No one could help me. They ended up sending me to rheumatology, endocrinology. And it wasn't until I had to file for Social Security almost 2 years ago and still denied, I got my records. And everyone, I have three separate doctors, thyroid disorder, autoimmune thyroid disease, and cretinism, which both my brother and sister have. Not one letter, not one phone call stating these facts. So by a year ago, my peroxidase, which had held for 3 years, what my TPO antibodies were at.
We're getting a little bit complicated here, Donna, but what is the point is that conventional medicine couldn't help you?
No, what happened was my ANA and my autoimmune was running so amok that I can't take statins, I cannot take any antidepressants, I have adverse side effects. So I ended up going to Dr. Berquist in Viroqua at the Hirsch Clinic.
Yeah, we don't want to turn it into an advertisement either, though, Donna.
Yeah, no, but I ended up finding out through several blood tests. I had no D, no B6, no B12. My IBS was awful. My ANA was still high. My peroxidase was still high. So he put me on a regime because my cholesterol was also, my bad cholesterol was high. So I take krill, D3, B6, B12, and curcumin for inflammation. All of my problems have gone away. I still have the neuropathy, the muscle apathy, the ptosis, the Hashimoto's.
Donna, thank you. She's saying that she couldn't take conventional medicine, the statins, I guess, being one example, but these other things she took care of her problem. What's your response to that, Dr. Offit?
It's a hard story to respond to. I mean, I don't really understand what her underlying medical disorder was, because there were so many things that were listed there. So I don't think I could reasonably claim to offer any advice here. I would offer this cautionary note, though. I think this sort of the so-called mega vitamin industry is a racket. I really do. If you look, but here's what I mean by mega vitamin. I mean those doctors or alternative therapists who take sort of measure your vitamin levels and then decide that you're low and that you need to have them enhanced, and then offer vitamins either intravenously or by mouth that are largely in excess of the recommended daily allowance, the so-called RDA. And I'm talking 5-fold, 10-fold, 20-fold greater than the recommended daily allowance. If you look at those studies, and I talk about this at some level at the beginning of the book, it would scare you to take large quantities of vitamins because you can actually shift the balance of oxidation to antioxidation in your body to the extent that you have too much antioxidants like vitamin A, C, beta-carotene, which is an A precursor, minerals like selenium. You actually can take too much of that, and that you actually then can increase your risk of heart disease and increase your risk of cancer. There are more than 20 studies that have shown this. They've been done by reputable institutions and published in great journals like JAMA, Journal of the American Medical Association, New England Journal of Medicine. This is not a medical controversy. So I guess I'm just offering, when you asked earlier, how can alternative therapy hurt? I think that the notion that that there's no such thing as getting too much of a good thing is a false one, and you should be very careful about taking large quantities of vitamins in excess of what's recommended, the so-called recommended daily allowance.
So we had somebody who tweeted, ask the guest who pays his salary. I guess what it comes down to, we had another Facebook comment, are you pushing conventional medicine because of, I don't know, the drug companies, the pharmaceutical companies pay you to do so?
Yeah, first of all, I'm paid by the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Secondly, this is the question that I find the most humorous, actually. I mean, who do people think makes these products? I mean, it's a $34 billion a year industry, the dietary supplement and vitamin industry. $34 billion a year. Do they think that these products are made by elves and old hippies on flowering meadows? It's made by pharmaceutical companies, including big pharmaceutical companies. This is big pharma. So, for example, Pfizer recently bought Alacer. Pfizer is now the largest maker of vitamin C, of mega vitamins in this country. Huffman LaRoche has been in the supplement vitamin business since the 1930s. This is big pharma. I mean, if big pharma is paying my salary, they're not doing a very good job because this is them.
Is there any good science behind any of the, I don't know, the claims of various supplements? For instance, my husband's doctor told him to take vitamin D and omega-3 fish oil.
All right, here's what I would say. I certainly it is clear that women of childbearing age benefit from taking vitamin B9, which is folic acid. It's clear that if you are folic acid deficient during your pregnancy, you have an increased risk of delivering children with spina bifida. It's clear that children should get a vitamin K shot at birth. It's clear that mothers who are either fully or partially breastfeeding their children should supplement those children in the first year of life with vitamin D drops, because they will need it, assuming they don't get outside much, which is generally true of babies. People who are vegans should definitely take supplemental iron as well as some B complex vitamins. And there are certain degenerative eye conditions that benefit from certain B vitamins. So there certainly are examples where vitamins, for example, are of value, absolutely clear. But I think for the generally healthy person, they don't need them. And I think what most people do is they take a multivitamin, which has at or about the recommended daily allowance, because they think, you know, it's an insurance policy. I'm not sure I'm getting everything I need. But, you know, there was just a study that just came out in the Annals of Internal Medicine this past week, so it's timely, showing that they're of no value. They don't decrease your risk of heart disease. They don't decrease your risk of cancer. So, I mean, I think this is, again, much ado about little when it comes to taking these things.
Let's take another call from Anna in Harbor Springs. Hi, Anna. You're on the air.
Hello. I have two comments to make. The first one, I will tell you that I've been working with alternative things for myself for 25, 30 years, and it's true. You have to do your own research. You can't just take stuff off the shelf, and you can't just say, well, I thought this guy was pretty good. So, you know, I mean, you can take recommendations from people, but you have to do your own research, and there's plenty of it out there. Now, I was, a few years ago, I ruptured two discs in my neck, and I went to a neurosurgeon, and he was ready to do the surgery almost right away. He said, we're going to have to go in through your neck, and you will probably have some vocal cord damage. When he said that, the caution light went on, because I'm a singer. And he said, there's nothing that you're going to be able to do to take care of this other than surgery. But I had heard for years about a shiatsu practitioner who had a sterling reputation. So I went to him, and within the first visit, I started to have relief. And just to make the long story short, I never had to have that surgery. That was about 4.5 years ago. I have not had any consequences because of it, and I have been diagnosed with MS, and I have had long-term chronic depression, and he has helped me with all of these things, mm-hmm. And that's not a placebo.
Dr. Offit?
Sorry that the doctor had the negative experience he had. Those things can happen, too, but I believe he's throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
All right. Well, what's your response to that, Dr. Offit?
Yeah, thanks, Anna. I actually agree with what you're saying. I think the word placebo is an unfortunate one, because I think when people hear the word placebo, what they hear is something that's dismissive, that this is just all in your head, that there's nothing physiological about it. That's not what I'm saying. In fact, in this book, towards the end of the book, I talk about the power of this particular response, which can be physiological. People can learn to release their own endorphins. They can learn to upregulate and downregulate their own immune system, and that's even been shown at the experimental animal level. I think that's really cool, and I do think it's something that is testable. So, in other words, in this particular case, where you didn't do the surgery, and then you got better associated with what this clinician was doing, why? I mean, why did that happen? Had you learned to release your own endorphins? I mean, had you just, with the notion that you were undergoing something that was therapeutic, was that calming to you so that you had a decrease in stress mediators, which can certainly do things like affect your immune system? I think that's all studyable. It's testable. It's understandable. I don't think we have to look to the gods or look to ancient, you know, belief systems in order to try and understand this. I think it is understandable. And I'm not trying to throw the baby out with the bathwater. The original title of this book was Quacks, How They Hurt Us and Why We Let Them. I changed that to a subtitle that includes the sense and nonsense of alternative medicine. I do think there is some sense to it, and that's it. It's what you mentioned at the end. The placebo response, I don't see that as something that is a negative thing. I think that there is a physiological basis, at least for some people, in this response.
Lynn on Facebook says, oh, yes, and Western chemical drugs / medications do not cause liver, kidney, other side effects. Just watch one advertisement. It's big business, too. Just follow the money. Look at all the clinics popping up everywhere. It's not health care. It's sick care. I'll take my chances with natural remedies any day, placebo or not.
Right. Well, again, I agree with her statement, follow the money. You should follow the money here, too. The only difference, you're right. I mean, certainly the pharmaceutical companies make products which can kill you. And it's oncology drugs, for example, can depress your immune system to the point that you have an overwhelming bacterial infection or suppress your bone marrow to the point that you bleed to death, no doubt about it. But there is something to be said for a licensed industry. And so for example, when doctors see a pharmaceutical product that is licensed, at least there are data often in thousands and sometimes tens of thousands of people pre-licensure, so you can know what the benefits are and know what the risks are. That's not true of this industry. There are no safety and efficacy data before these things are put on the shelves, because there doesn't have to be, because it's not FDA regulated. So therefore, it lives under this, as Lynn points to, an untouchable halo. She uses the word natural because it can't possibly hurt you, right? I mean, it's, first of all, I would say about 70% of pharmaceutical products are derived from plants or from natural products. So that's natural, too, if you want to make that argument. But I think be careful. Be careful. This industry, this dietary supplement industry, of the 54,000 dietary supplements on the shelves, I would say 170 or 0.3% have any sort of safety portfolio. So just beware. Bring the same level of skepticism to alternative medicine that one has for conventional medicine, for the same reasons that Lynn mentioned, which is follow the money. This is a big industry, and they make a lot of money doing what they do.
Next, we go to Patrick in Oshkosh. Hi, Patrick.
Yeah, I was just curious. At the beginning, I feel like a lot of, particularly acupuncture, when the guest was speaking about it, was debunked based on, its origins. And, I mean, if you look back at modern medicine, things that we believed, 50 years ago, much less 100 or a couple hundred years ago, are just as mystifying as, basing the body, on the number of rivers in China. And so I just think it was an oversimplification of something that's been honed over the years. And, he even admitted that, relief comes from that. And I know that there's not studies showing that, all these things work. But, you take something like acupuncture, there's not nearly the money that's in supplements or in Western medicine. And so if somebody isn't willing to take a drug that might cause cancer or might cause tuberculosis, what do they do? Are they supposed to sit around for, 15, 20 years until that study, somebody gets around to doing that study?
Yeah, so some things also aren't profitable, so they're not really studied, Dr. Offit.
If they worked, they would be studied. Let me put it this way. It's much simpler for this industry to claim, for example, that concentrated garlic lowers low density lipoprotein cholesterol. They can't say that on the label. They can't say, lowers LDL or bad cholesterol. So what they say is supports heart health or supports prostate health or supports joint health, because they know that the FDA regulates a specific medical claim. It's how hard is it to do the study to see whether or not garlic really does lower LDL cholesterol? And if it does, I think it's probably going to be safer than statins. Although, remember, concentrated garlic clearly can have an antiplatelet effect and cause bleeding, which I think probably most people don't know, because that's certainly not on the label, because it's an unregulated industry. If it worked, though, if it worked and it was safer and better than statins, it's easy enough to study. And it would be studied. In fact, it has been studied, and it does lower LDL cholesterol. So, I mean, people, for example, that claim cures for autism, which is certainly a big thing for alternative therapists. I mean, they'll say they have a variety of biomedical treatments for autism. This is a disorder that affects 1 in 88 children in this country. If you had a cure for autism, wouldn't you be the first in line to test it and prove that it worked? But that doesn't happen here, because it's much easier to make the claim, to advertise the claim, and to let the public buy these products, not knowing whether or not it really is what it's claimed to be.
Were you ridiculing acupuncture because it was based on the 12 rivers in China?
I'm, I see, here's what I'm saying. I guess I'm not making myself incredibly careful. People are attacking me on my acupuncture stance. What I'm saying is that the basis of acupuncture, the notion that you can put needles within particular meridians, is nonsense. It's utter nonsense. Now, that doesn't mean that it doesn't work. I think that it does work. It just doesn't matter where you put the needles. And as we now know, it doesn't even matter whether you put the needles under the skin. A retractable needle, or said another way, acupressure, can work just as well. That's interesting. Well, if that's true, if retractable needles work just as well here, then why not use a retractable needle? Because if you put a needle under the skin, you may be one of those 83 people reported in the medical literature for whom the needle has broken off and lodged in hearts or lungs or liver and caused death. Or you may be one of those many people for whom that needle put under the skin has introduced diseases like hepatitis B, hepatitis C, or human immunodeficiency virus, the AIDS virus. So if a retractable needle works just as well, then use a retractable needle. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying it doesn't work. I'm just saying it doesn't work for the reasons people think it works. And that's, you know, I just think people, it's okay to know that. I think what's happened here, and I think that's why probably all four callers and the tweeter who sort of logged into your show this morning are generally negative, is when you take these stances, when you try and make it a scientific argument, you know, you've attacked the church of vitamins and supplements and acupuncture, and you get, you know, these sort of negative responses. All I'm saying is, look at the data. Think about it and look at the science behind this. But, you know, in some ways, I think people don't want to have that belief system taken away from them. I'll give you a quick example. My daughter is currently a freshman in college, but she was a senior in high school last year. She rowed crew. She would have this tingling in her fingers and toes associated with rowing crew, and her crewmates convinced her she had exercise-induced asthma, which she doesn't have, and they wanted her to get an inhaled bronchodilator, which she wasn't going to get. So instead, my wife took her to the General Nutrition Center and bought her Himalayan sea salt puffer. Okay, now this is a plastic canister in which one puts this Himalayan sea salt, and there's holes in the top, and you breathe in the salt air. So she's reading this label the next morning at the table, and she this is great, right? This is going to be great. It's from the Himalayan formations hundreds of millions of years ago. This is going to be great. And so I said to her, honey, do you really think that the sodium chloride, the salt in this preparation, is any different than the salt in that salt shaker? And she looked at me and she said, would you let me believe in something, damn it?
I was going to say, that had to drive you bonkers, though, too, that your wife and daughter are doing that.
But I think she's right, because here's what could have happened had I said nothing. She inhales it. It relaxes her, calms her down. She thinks this is going to work because now she thinks it's getting at the heart of her problem, which she believes is bronchospasm, which it really wasn't. But so now she's calmer. Now she doesn't hyperventilate, which is really what the problem was. And now she doesn't have the tingling in her hands and her toes. And as far as she's concerned, Himalayan sea salt has treated her problem. And that's fine. I think that's absolutely fine. It doesn't hurt her. And I probably shouldn't have said anything because I was, you know, I just was being too scientific for her. And that's fair. I think what she said to me was probably exactly the right thing to say.
Katie emails, chiropractic is a regulated profession. Numerous times it was referred to as unregulated and ineffective on this show. Chiropractic education includes 2 years of prerequisites or a bachelor's degree, 3.5 years at an accredited chiropractic college. So chiropractic is a regulated profession, Dr. Offen?
Well, first of all, what I was saying, and maybe I didn't make this clear, is that the dietary supplement industry is not a regulated industry by the FDA. It's a virtually unregulated industry by the FDA. That's what I was saying. I mean, my problems with chiropractic are not with regard to the scenario you painted earlier, which was low back pain. I don't have a problem with that. Where I have a problem is when they delve into the areas of medicine, because that's not where they shine. And most specifically, in my interest, they are often anti-vaccine, which is a terrible recommendation. And there are people who see chiropractors and, as a consequence, don't get vaccines that they need. And that's them at their worst.
Yeah, like chiropractors who say they can clear up a kid's ear infections.
Ear colic or headaches or asthma. I mean, and again, there is a placebo effect there, which can be of value. But you have to be careful that you don't, again, either do something where it could potentially hurt you, or not do something where for example, taking a vaccine, which could obviously save your life.
Dr. Paul Offit is Chief of the Division of Infectious Diseases, Director of the Vaccine Education Center at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. He is the author of several books, most recently, Do You Believe in Magic? The Sense and Nonsense of Alternative Medicine. His other books include Deadly Choices, How the Anti-Vaccine Movement Threatens Us All, and Autism's False Prophets. Bad Science, Risky Medicine, and The Search for a Cure. 1-800-642-1234 if you would like to talk about the sense and nonsense of alternative medicine, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Dr. Paul Offit, who is the author of Do You Believe in Magic? The Sense and Nonsense of Alternative Medicine. And our next caller is Becky in Whitewater. Hi, Becky. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Hi, Dr. Paul. Hi, Joan. A couple of things. I think we're a lot of times patients truly miss the mark on what's important. They think if they take a pill, oh my God, this is going to make me so much better. And in fact, I used to do integrative cancer consultations because I do have a degree. I'm a nurse practitioner by training, and also I have a degree, associate fellowship in integrative medicine from the University of Arizona. So what I had patients come in and they bring their bags of supplements, and I have them do a 24-hour food diary prior to me seeing them. And one lady had for breakfast, she had $500 worth of supplements in this paper bag, but she had a donut and a cup of coffee for breakfast. So I think we're truly missing the mark on educating people on what they need to do. Doctor?
Mm-hmm. I agree with you, Becky. I mean, I think we, especially the conventional therapist, generally doesn't give sort of preventive type advice, just exercise and eat right and do things that reduce stress, whatever that is. Living in Philadelphia, I can tell you it's not following Philadelphia sports teams, but you know that is something I think we're not trained at very well, and I think we don't do very well, and I think frankly we often don't have the time given sort of the way that sort of the outpatient schedules are constructed these days. So I think you're right, and I think that's all part of medicine, that's all part of good health, and I think that's the part we're not particularly good at. We're much better at writing prescriptions and for everything. And I think, you know, you could argue reasonably that, you know, the pharmaceutical companies, I think, often try and convince us that everything is a disease that requires a medicine. And I think that's not true either. There's a wonderful book actually called The Death of Sadness, talking about how there's no such thing as a mood anymore. Everybody has an affective disorder that requires treatment. So I think you're right. I think in some ways that we have gone astray, and you make a good point.
So there is no such thing as seasonal affective disorder that can be helped by light and vitamin D?
I'm all for the light part.
But not the vitamin D.
I think you have to be careful with vitamin D. It's the most recent recommendation by the U.S., again, the U.S. National Task Force for Prevention, is that, you know, people don't really, assuming they can get outside twice a week for at least 15 minutes and have, you know, skin exposed without sunblock on it, you're generally going to get what you need. Vitamin D technically is not a vitamin. It's a hormone that we make ourselves. We actually don't require it in foods. And many foods are supplemented with vitamin D. It's hard not to get vitamin D. Fruity Pebbles has vitamin D in it. So I guess in work reading this book, and I didn't feel this way before because I would take vitamins before I read this book, but I no longer take any vitamins or supplements after doing the research for this book. You know, everybody thinks that when they take these products in pill form, that it's the same thing as getting them in fruits and vegetables, and that's not the case. The so-called phytovitamins, you know, are often processed and presented in a manner different than when you take it in pill form, and you also bypass your level of satiety. You know, if you walk into a GNC center, for example, you can buy their vitamin E preparation, and if you look on the back, it says 3,333% of the RDA. That's 33 times the recommended daily allowance. Open the bottle, take out a little brown gel cap. It's about half the size of an almond. An almond is an excellent source of vitamin E. You would have to eat 1,650 almonds to get what's in that one gel cap. That is not a natural thing to do. That's a little less than 17 pounds of almonds. That should worry you. It should worry you that you're bypassing the level of satiety. People that pop 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C, you would have to eat 8 cantaloupes to get that. I just think that the fact this industry has been able to sell itself as natural is remarkable to me, because these are not natural acts.
Well, Betsy on Facebook does have more questions about vitamin D. She says it's been touted to solve or prevent many problems. Where can I find more about the evidence for or against supplementing with vitamin D?
So I think the U.S. National Task Force for Prevention does a pretty good job at reviewing the evidence. Harvard also has a nutritional website that is pretty good. The Mayo Clinic has a website that's pretty good. I think you should go to trusted, you know, websites. Generally, it come from reasonable academic institutions. But I like the U.S. National Task Force for Prevention. I think they've been great lately on their recommendations for vitamin D, for this business of, you know, adult men need to get PSA levels and whether they need to do all the surgery they're doing. I think they've been really good about trying to provide evidence for people. And most recently, you know, the story that they did with omega-3 fatty acids and stuff. So I think they've been great.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with Dr. Paul Offit. He is the author of Do You Believe in Magic? The Sense and Nonsense of Alternative Medicine. He's with us in part because a listener suggested he be with us to talk with you about the alternative medicines or supplements or therapies that he says are often unregulated, are ineffective, a waste of money, and in some cases dangerous. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Ray in Milwaukee is with us next. Hi, Ray.
I'd like to focus in on the placebo effect. Joy, I think it was on your show or maybe Kathleen's show during the last year or two, you had the author of the book, The Placebo Effect. I don't know if that's the title. But one of the main cases that I was fascinated by was how often the placebo effect is far better than the petroleum pharmaceuticals that are killing millions of people a year. And this test with knee injuries, where people would actually have a placebo surgery on their knee. They might even make an incision in the knee, but actually nothing is done. And I think it was 80% of those people always felt far better and were more mobile compared to the people who had the real surgery. So this is my question. If taking St. John's wort, instead of St. John's wort, it has rice in it, but the placebo effect makes me feel better, who cares? All I care about is, do I feel better? And the pharmaceutical petroleum industry is killing thousands of people every year. Why don't you do a book first on the problems with that and then do this as a secondary, since this is a smaller problem than what the huge pharmaceutical companies are doing to us.
In response to that, Dr. Hoffman.
Yeah, hi, Ray. Here's what I would say. First of all, the author of the study that looked at sham surgery versus real surgery for osteoarthritis or inflammation of joints, the first author was Nelda Ray, W-R-A-Y. What she found was, that she and her coworkers found, was that if you did a sham surgery, and they did that, they made an incision, amazingly got an institutional review board approval for this, but they did a cut, they put the patient, you know, under some level of anesthesia, and then they either went in and they did this sort of, you know, removing things like, you know, bone spurs or loose cartilage, or they didn't. They would just make the cut and close it up. Those two groups did exactly the same. There was no difference between the two. And I think what my interpretation of that and what their interpretation of that was is the perception that you were getting a procedure done was enough to make you feel better, independent of whether or not they followed through on the procedure. So it wasn't that those who had the actual surgery did worse. They did exactly the same. It was indistinguishable. The second thing regarding your point about, you know, if one believes that St. John's wort, for example, treats your severe depression, that should be good enough if it does. And I don't disagree with that to a point. The point being, St. John's wort, you could argue that for mild depression may be of some value. There you could make that argument. But for severe depression, it isn't. And that, I mean, that study has been done. It was published in the New England Journal of Medicine. And so if there are drugs which can work for severe depression and you take St. John's wort instead, you may be making a bad choice. That's all I'm saying. And so your earlier point about how the placebo response in some ways can be better than taking a drug, I agree with that. And I think trying to find ways to get to that placebo response, which is to say that your body as your own doctor, essentially, that you can learn to do things like upregulate or regulate your own immune system or release your own endorphins. I think that's great. I think that's great. All I'm saying is, don't take something that you think can't possibly hurt you, but it can. Don't avoid something where there's something that really could help you, and don't get bilked. There are certainly a lot of people out there, you know, who are perfectly willing to make a fortune off of your misfortune, and you should be careful about that. That's all I'm saying.
Bill in Sun Prairie is with us. Hello, Bill.
Hi. I want to agree with the doctor about being skeptical. However, I would ask him to be skeptical about both the naturopathic and the allopathic worlds. Also follow the money, same thing there. You know, the pharmaceutical industries have been sued, GlaxoKline, Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, Abbott Labs, for billions of dollars for misrepresentation and fraud. And if you add up the death count on both sides of the allopathic and naturopathic worlds, I think there's been far more deaths caused by conventional medicine.
Well, let's get a response to that. Ray kind of alluded to that as well.
Of course that's true. I mean, when somebody comes into our hospital with cancer, which, you know, we're a big hospital, we're a 650-bed hospital. When they come into our hospital with cancer, we treat them with cancer-specific drugs, oncological drugs, which are serious drugs that can cause major side effects. Now, we could treat them with more, you know, with dietary supplements. We could treat them with emu oil, you know, and crystals and prayer. And I can tell you that that would be much safer. It also wouldn't treat their problem. So serious diseases require serious medicines that can have serious side effects. Of course that's true. And so I mean, I don't disagree with that. And your earlier point about how pharmaceutical companies can act aggressively or unethically or even illegally, of course that's true. All I'm saying is, you know, regarding a naturopath, for example, I mean, cinchona bark contains quinine. And if when people come into our hospital, and it happens more frequently than you think, with malaria from other countries, you know, we treat them with quinine because we know that we can get a 600-milligram tablet that is regulated by the Food and Drug Administration from a pharmaceutical industry that's manufacturing under good manufacturing practices. We don't give them cinchona bark to chew on. So I think there you just have to look at the strengths and weaknesses of each of these different forms of therapy and make sure that you don't get screwed by either of them.
Valerie in Racine is with us now. Hi, Valerie.
Yes, hi. Good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call. I have a point that I'd like to make to both sides of the medicine world. I have MS, and I take my traditional Western medicine, and I take my shot every day like I'm supposed to. However, in addition to that, I also see an acupuncturist, a naturopath, and an herbalist. And I've got to tell you, one thing that I have noticed that more and more people need to be aware of is that, yes, you take your traditional medicines that are Western, quote-unquote, medicines, and you do those things. But the best thing that I have had with a naturopath, an acupuncturist, and things like that is that it has cleaned up in so many ways my dietary needs, my exercise needs, and it has given me a lot of other things. I have turned my life around in so many ways.
I'm happy about that, Valerie. We have just a minute, though. What about doing them together, Dr. Offit?
Sure. I mean, I think it's I may be misunderstanding what Valerie's saying, but I think if what Valerie's saying is that by going to these other healers that she's, you know, paying more attention to her general lifestyle things, you know, like exercise and doing things like reducing stress and eating better, that's great. And if she's making the point, and I think it's a good one, that conventional therapists aren't often as good about sort of spending time offering that kind of advice, I agree with that. So I think that's all great. Just don't hurt yourself.
What's the takeaway from your book?
I think the takeaway from my book is that there's no such thing as alternative medicine, that there's medicine that works and medicine that doesn't. And, you know, one should bring the same level of scientific rigor to all sides of this and not get duped. Just be thoughtful about it and realize that nothing should be living under an untouchable halo. And I think at some level, alternative medicine does.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy.
Dr. Paul Offit is author of Do You Believe in Magic? The Sense and Nonsense of Alternative Medicine. He is also chief of the Division of Infectious Diseases and director of the Vaccine Education Center at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Thanks to Christy Taylor and to Marika Saval for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I hope you're also with us tomorrow at this time for another edition of On Your Money. Certified Financial Planner Kevin McKinley will answer your personal finance questions tomorrow at this time. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.